With my hand on the door jamb, some buried alive instinct thumps within my chest. This is going to hurt. I take a deep breath and step inside. The bedchamber of Prince Regent Toa Felathon is really pretty restrained when you consider that the guy in the bed there rules the second largest empire on Overworld. The bed itself is a modest 8-poster, only half an acre or so. The extra 4 posts, each an overcarved slab of rose-veined thyril thicker than my thigh, support lamps of gleaming brass. Long yellow flames like blades of spears waver gently in the breeze from the concealed service door. I close the door soundlessly behind me, and its brocade paper-covered surface blends seamlessly into the pattern of the wall. I wade through the billowing carpet of silken cushions, a knee-high cloud of vividly shimmering primary colors. A flash of maroon and gold to my left, and my heart suddenly hammers. But it's only my own livery, my servant's dress, captured briefly in the spun silver mirror atop the Prince Regent's commode of lacquered Lipkin crim. The reflection shows me the spell, the enchanted face I present. Smooth, rounded cheeks, sandy hair, a trace of peach fuzz. I tip myself a blurry wink and smile with my sandpaper lips, ease out a silent sigh, and keep moving. The Prince Regent lies propped on pillows larger than my whole bed and snores happily, the silver hairs of his mustache puffing in and out with each wheeze. A book lies face down across his ample chest, one of Kim Larthen's series of Corish romances. This draws another smile out of my dry mouth. Who would have figured the Lion of Prorathon for a sentimentalist? Fairy tales, simple stories for simple minds, a breath of air to cool brows overheated by the complexities of real life. I set the golden tray down softly on the table beside his bed. He stirs, shifting comfortably in his sleep, and freezing my blood. His movement sends a puff of lavender scent up from the pillows. My fingers tingle. His hair, unbound for napping, falls in a steel-colored spray around his face. That noble brow, those flashing eyes, that ruggedly carved chin exposed by careful shaving within his otherwise full beard, he's everybody's perfect image of the great king. The statue of him on his rearing charger, the one that stands in the court of the gods near the fountain of Prorathon, will make a fine, inspiring memorial. His eyes pop open when he feels my hand grip his throat. I'm far too professional to try to stifle his shout with a hand over the mouth, and only a squeak gets past my grip. Further struggle is discouraged by his close-up view of my knife, its thick, double-edged point an inch from his right eye. I bite my tongue, and saliva gushes into my mouth to moisten my throat. My voice is steady, very low, and very flat. It's customary at times like this to say a few words. A man shouldn't die with no understanding of why he's been murdered. I do not pride myself on my eloquence, and so I will keep this simple. I lean close and stare past my knife blade into his eyes. The monasteries kept you on the oaken throne by supporting your foolish action against Lipki in the Plains War. The Council of Brothers felt, on balance, that you would be a strong enough ruler to hold the empire together, at least until the Child Queen reaches majority.